Hello, everybody. Welcome to our latest podcast. And today I'm joined by my colleague, John Newsome.
Good morning.
And as I think most of you know, I am Duncan Williams. I sometimes feel, John, that we must sound like grumpy old men. And it's all very repetitive as well, which can get a little bit boring. But I think suddenly there's more attention being given to interest rates and inflation, which is our usual topic. It definitely looks as though, as time goes by, reductions in interest rates globally are looking slightly less likely. Since our last podcast, US inflation was slightly higher than expected. UK inflation was marginally higher than expected.
Can I just stop you there? You're going off message again. We're all supposed to believe in make-believe, okay? Interest rates are coming down. Everything's fine. There is no problem. So this higher for longer stuff that we've been, you know, we have been saying it for a little while, I think you need to get with this.
Well, we just have to be realistic, don't we? I mean, that's the important thing. These figures are not good. I drove backwards and forwards to the Northeast, and you come past all the petrol stations and petrol is more expensive.
Is that because oil prices have gone up? Because the demand for energy is still rising.
I think something like that. I didn't see any windmills going around because it wasn't windy. But anyway, we can't get away from the fact that everything we do in our lives virtually is dependent on energy. And that doesn't matter whether it's the postman delivering your letter.
Or not delivering.
Yes, that's also true. Or whether it's you filling up your car, etc., etc. Energy costs are rising. Inflation's always been scales. Little bits of it are going up, little bits of it are going down. But with one of your major inputs going up, I can't see where prices are coming down. I just don't see it, whereby we're going to end up with an average of 2%.
Well, just to be serious for a moment, as we've been saying for quite some time, the transition to decarbonize is way too short. It's utter wishful thinking. It is not grounded in reality. You have a planet with 8 billion people on it that is reliant upon fossil fuels. You can either accept that or you can pretend it's not the case. But with 35% of the world's population in China and India, they're hoovering up cheap Russian oil. China last year built twice as many coal-fired power stations as the rest of the world put together. And you've got rising world energy demand. So if the supply curve of oil and gas is not being encouraged to expand and the demand curve is moving up, it is basic economics, which is probably why it fails to register with the global elite and all the people who really need to understand. It is inevitable you are going to have rising energy prices. And that, as you've already said, ricochets through the global economy. With what's going on in the world now, not only just rising demand, but you've got the near shoring of a lot of Far East production, certainly from China. That is going to be inflationary as well. So you've got these little fires of inflation that are going to keep igniting. And we could just generalize and say that the global economy, in our opinion, has become more prone to inflation full stop, which is going to make it very difficult to hit a 2% inflation target. I mean, even now, we're still significantly away from that. So are they going to ultimately, are central banks ultimately going to look at these inflation targets and be a little bit elastic in how they shoot for them? I suspect they probably will. But all central banks, you know, over the last decade or more, they've backed themselves into a corner and it's going to be a problem. So we can either be realistic about the situation, or we can continue believing in make-believe, and you know, we'll continue with the former.
I mean, it's interesting to, in the States now, they're sort of, most of the analysts are thinking that there's going to be a cut in September. There is a possibility of a cut in June, but at the beginning of this calendar year, everyone was talking about 6 cuts during 2024. That doesn't look as though it's going to happen, but there are positives. I mean, the US economy is actually performing better than the analysts thought, but well, we need to reiterate to our listeners that there are massive differences between the UK and America at the coalface. The biggest one being that when people go and buy a house in America, they tend to sign up for a 30-year mortgage. So that gives them certainty. As everyone knows, in this country, you get a 5-year deal, a 2-year deal, or a variable deal. And what we're seeing is 1.6 million mortgages being reset this year. There are more next year, there are more the year afterwards. And suddenly, there is going to be a huge amount of money being sucked out of the UK economy. And we're already seeing that because the latest retail sales in the UK were poor.
Yeah, well, I think the US has so many advantages, one of which is that it's the world's biggest oil producer and it's self-sufficient in energy, certainly with natural gas, can now start exporting. So the US is in a far stronger position. And of course, it's got an economy that leads the world in terms of technology. You can either be realistic or you can just continue living in a make-believe world where everything that's supposed to happen will happen.
Until it doesn't happen.
Until it doesn't happen, exactly. So ask yourself, why is energy going up? Why is gold going up? Are governments solvent? They're all spending way, way more than their tax bases allow. And perhaps more worryingly, no plans to actually rein any of it back. The economic situation is not great. So you can either accept it or you can just live in a fool's paradise.
Yes, I don't think they're going to rein anything in. I think it's going to be a case of how the boffins can think of ways to tax us more.
Well, there's a limit to how far you can go with that, and there's a limit to how far you can keep printing money. If you don't get your income and expenditure into line, I think the old money printing trick's going to come back. We all know that if money printing could generate prosperity, then Zimbabwe would be a paradise, wouldn't it? It would look like Switzerland without the snow and the mountains.
We have mentioned in the past Tesla and electric vehicles. We've been somewhat skeptical, especially here in the UK, where the infrastructure is clearly woefully short.
Stop saying that. You're going off message again.
Well, you've got to accept it. The infrastructure isn't there. I mean, I didn't realise, but these Teslas at super fast charging stations charge within 45 minutes, which I get that. But I mean, when you plug them in at home, they charge overnight, which again makes sense. But I mean, how many cups of coffee can you actually have at a service station? But anyway, the point is Tesla sales are down sharply, and that's globally, and they are cutting costs mainly through getting rid of some of their workforce.
Yeah, I mean, Tesla might be a brilliant company and all the rest of it, but I think you can see that the public, not just here, they're not embracing things as quickly as governments would like them to, because the whole infrastructure means that electric vehicles are nowhere near as flexible as fossil fuel powered ones. It's that simple. But I've always thought, really, with Tesla, what does Tesla know that Toyota doesn't? So when you looked at the market capitalization of Tesla versus the big global motor car companies, there is a disconnect there, in my opinion.
Yes, I have a friend who's bent my ear about electric motor cars for the last 5 or 7 years, telling me how good they are. Anyway, revenge is going to be sweet because he's just bought a petrol vehicle, given that he only does 6,000 miles a year. I don't quite get
Maybe he's just being practical, Duncan.
it. Yeah, absolutely. So, again, moving on, John and I have been talking about Shell, BP, and the tobacco companies in the way that the UK market, it is felt, does not value our companies in those sectors fairly. But over the weekend, Ocado is now under some pressure to move from the UK to a New York listing, which again, I think is quite interesting.
Well, it doesn't make money, does it? In some ways, it's looked upon as a tech stock, and it may well be that New York is much more amenable to looking at businesses that don't make money, but perhaps assuming that in the future that they will do. I mean, I don't blame any company for shifting its listing if it's going to get a higher valuation, but whether it ultimately deserves it is another
Yeah,
question.
it's just not good for the UK, is it really? And the perception of the UK going forwards. I read an article saying that bank profits are expected to fall as consumers are looking for better deals on their mortgages and on their deposits. So presumably that's cutting their margins. But conversely, one of our companies, L'Oreal, came out with some stellar results last week. So it's very much a two-speed market in certain areas.
Certain companies, I would argue, have certain natural advantages that have been established for a long time. One needs to attempt to identify them and then take a long-term view. Is that competitive moat sustainable? And the business that you've just mentioned, I would argue, offers all that.
And obviously, when it comes to investing, the general public either consider shares or sometimes they consider property. But I was interested again to read that first-time buyers face their toughest test in the last 70 years in terms of both deposits and the level of their income in order to get mortgages, to be able to pay the mortgages at these higher rates. This is the worst level of affordability there's been in a long, long time, which does make me wonder where property prices are going to go in the short to medium term.
Yeah, well, due to the mismanagement of inflation and interest rates by central banks over the past, I would say, sort of 20 years or so, maybe more, we've ended up with a situation where the average house is so far away from the average salary that people can't afford them. What should have happened was, if you were going to run with low interest rates because inflation was relatively low, which was always going to come to an end because importing cheap stuff from China couldn't go on forever. So you had rising service inflation, but deflation coming in from China, and it happened to net out at around 2%, but it was never going to go on forever. Once you've allowed that to happen, you've ended up with multiples of salary, which, as I say, are so far away from average for the average person to buy the average house. What should have happened was that instead of 3 times your salary, it should have been notched down to, say, 2.5. That would have kept the lid on affordability. But they've allowed a property boom to continue for so long now that they can't deflate it because it would destroy banks' balance sheets. And when I said earlier that all their policy errors have backed them into a corner now, now you're seeing they've nowhere else to go. None of their theories have worked. And it's just gross incompetence. I don't think you see any sensibly run central bank of major economies now. I mean, the Fed has actually got its finger out with regard to trying to correct the issues. But as for the Bank of England and the ECB, it's no point from me.
Well, one of the Fed members last week, she suggested the next move for US interest rates could possibly be up.
Oh, stop saying that stuff. That's not what you're meant to believe.
Let's move on further. We knew that Somerset, which is Jacob Rees-Mogg's business, has struggled and it's put itself up for sale, but more information came out about it. The profits have halved, and that's due to James's Place making a significant redemption within their flagship Far Eastern Fund. So that business is now being passed on to a new provider. We had a look at the performance of that fund, and it had been a decent fund, not one which we bought for our clients. We buy a couple of other Far Eastern funds, but it does make you question why that has happened. Coming to an end now, the number of complaints against the banks evidently have significantly increased due to Nigel Farage and him being debanked. Other people are being debanked too. It does make me wonder whether that will end up moving on into the investment industry, into our industry. For example, people could say that they're being pushed out because of minimum portfolio sizes. Another one where there are problems for a lot of businesses is if there are US beneficiaries to a trust or even US-based investors. It's not a problem to us, but big organisations have taken a sledgehammer to crack a nut and have just got rid of any foreign or American-based investors. And even things which you wouldn't dream of could affect whether you are allowed to be looked after by an FCA registered business. For example, your place of birth. If you were actually born in America, there are issues there, even though you were born when your parents were over there for secondment within the army or the RAF or whatever it might have been. But also people who have been born in countries where there are sanctions. And again, sledgehammer to crack a nut, a lot of our competitors, from what I've seen, have just said, no, we're just not getting involved. You've got to be plain vanilla with plenty of money for those type of businesses to look after you. And one final thought for today's podcast is about pensions. I was somewhat surprised to read that it might be that the taxation of pensions will change. A lot of people will know that if you have a pension and you never draw on it, you can use it as an inheritance tax planning tool. Concerningly, that might alter. And that's under a Tory government. Goodness knows what would happen under a Labour government. So, on that happy note, thank you very much for listening. We have banged on about our usual topic of inflation and interest rates.
I think I'd just call it reality, Duncan, really. I think that's.
Okay. I wonder, when I started out in this job 35 years ago, we used to sit there on a Friday afternoon at 1:30 waiting for the balance of payment figures to come out. Balance of payments has not been mentioned for years. Inflation hadn't been mentioned for years. So I just wonder whether in a few years' time we'll have changed our tune. We won't be talking about inflation as much, but we'll be banging on about balance of payments. You'll have to keep on listening to find out whether that's going to be the case.
Well, in those days, you were talking about fundamental nuts and bolts of economics, haven't you? We've long since moved on from that, and that's why we're in the pickle that we are.
So, thank you very much. We've talked about interest rates and inflation, as I mentioned. We've talked about Tesla. We've talked about listing on the New York Stock Exchange, a little bit about the property market, and maybe debanking will turn into de investment management or something along those lines.
Or debugging.
Debanking, yeah, maybe. Right, okay. Thanks a lot. We'll speak to you next time.
This material shouldn't be considered as advice or an investment recommendation. You should consult an advisor regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority prior to making investment decisions. All investments carry a degree of risk. The value of any investment or income received from it can go up as well as down, and you may not get back the amount invested. Information recorded within this podcast was accurate at the time of recording.